Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine. Thank you for joining us for the Mobility Management Podcast. And today I'm joined by NCART's Executive Director, Don Clayback, incoming NCART Executive Director, Wayne Grau, and NCART Associate Director, McKay Lee, for an industry update as well as a look ahead. So Don, Wayne, and McKay, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Lori. We're very happy to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Lori.
Yep, thanks.
So, friends, I have a couple of different goals for this episode. First, of course, I want to welcome Wayne Grau, the incoming NCART Executive Director. If you follow Mobility Management Podcasts, you know that we team up with NCART regularly to provide updates on the complex rehab technology industry, and this is Wayne's very first podcast with us. Second, I want to take a moment to thank Don Clayback for his service to the CRT industry and on a personal note for his support of mobility management throughout its 20-year history. And then last but not least, this has been an extraordinarily busy, exciting summer for CRT. So we'll get caught up and get ready for the last part of the year. So actually, let's start with that update because in August and in September, we had CRT Awareness Week, plus the CMS public comment period for power seat elevation, but not for power standing. And then, of course, we also had the CRT virtual fly-in. So let's tackle that public comment period first. That public comment period for seat elevation ended in mid-September. What can we expect to happen next in that timeline? And what efforts are underway regarding power standing? Because power standing was left out of the CMS consideration this time around.
Yes, Lori, it's a great topic, and we got a lot to talk about. So let's hit this topic first. Just to recap for everybody, you know, we've been working since really, well, for before then, but since September 2020 on getting Medicare coverage for power seat elevation and power standing. And then we finally, after many months and a couple of years of work, had CMS open up the public comment period, which was the first step in the statutory process to get coverage. That 30-day period opened, and it ended on September 14th. So that was good news. But as you said, it only opened for power seat elevation. They did not open it up for power standing. CMS indicated that they're going to start with power seat elevation, but in their words, they're going to defer the review of power standing to a later date. So it was a good news, bad news type thing. So our focus really since that time has been twofold. One is to generate as many supportive comments through the public comment period, which ended September 14th. The good news is there were over 3,500 comments submitted from the public, many individuals, but also a great number of organizations from the industry, from the clinical and medical professional community, from the academic community, from rehab facilities. So we are very happy with the response that was generated around support for power seat elevation. So that was a significant event. Relative to opening up the power standing, we've been working with our members of Congress. And when I say we, I think most folks know this has been under the umbrella of the ITEM Coalition, which is a national organization of consumer, disability, and medical professional organizations. So through that, we were able to get Congress, our congressional leaders, which have been in the House, Congressman Langevin, and in the Senate, Senators Duckworth, Blackburn, and Casey. They were very concerned about CMS not opening up both of those items because that was what they were promised. They met with them back in the spring, and they were told the public comment period would open by the end of August. So while it opened in August, it didn't include both items. They're concerned about that. They've reached out individually to CMS, but more importantly, they've produced a sign-on letter in the House of Representatives and a sign-on letter in the Senate. And those are being circulated that basically say to CMS, you need to move forward expeditiously with both your review of seat elevation and you need to open up as soon as possible the review of power standing so that both those things can be reviewed fairly closely together. And then big picture wise, CMS has indicated that relative to power seat elevation, the comment period is now ended. So they'll be reviewing those comments. They expect to have what they call a proposed decision sometime in mid-February of next year. And then that proposed decision will be publish for another 30-day comment period. And at that time, the public can comment on, quote, the proposed decision. And then finally, CMS will issue a final decision in May of 2023. So that's the timeline on seat elevation. Power standing is going to be a little longer because obviously they haven't taken that first step. But we've tried to underscore that that's why it's important CMS open up the public comment period on power standing as soon as possible, because as that timeline indicates, you know, you're looking at 9 months before you're going to have a final decision once that period opens.
Thanks, Don. And as you pointed out, this goes back with the ITEM Coalition and other organizations such as NCART. This goes back to September 2020, right, when that first started?
Exactly. There was, and really, you could go back, we collectively had been meeting with CMS for probably 2 years before that around how do we best get coverage. And the direction we got from CMS was to follow the statutory process in getting the coverage policy reconsidered. And so once we got that input, there was a work group, several work groups under the ITEM Coalition. There was a legal work group, a clinical work group, a technology work group, and a consumer work group. And those folks all got together, and NCART played a significant role in that, as did our members. And out of that came that application that was submitted to CMS in September of 2020. And that was about a 90-page application, along with a couple of hundred citations of medical evidence and case studies and those kinds of things. So it was a very robust application. And while we certainly knew it wouldn't happen overnight, and we know COVID complicated that, you know, the fact that it's been almost 2 years and we really are just starting the next step of the official process is a little frustrating.
Okay, so that really points out the need to get power standing underway as soon as possible, given the timeline that we have sort of already seen with seat elevation. But at the same time, you have to be happy with the 3,500 plus comments for seat elevation funding during that public comment period. That's a pretty robust response, it seems.
Exactly. And I think our sense is it's from the broad spectrum of people that are impacted by this, the people that use it, their family members, the people that prescribe it, the people that provide and manufacture it. So we're very happy. And frankly, you know, it's a good time to thank everybody for taking the time to either submit their individual or their group comments. Like everything, there's more work to be done, but we're feeling good that at least we are at the next step. We are moving forward with the power seat elevation review, so we're going to focus on that. But we also want to make sure we get power standing included in the mix.
Thanks, Don. And in mid-September, we also had the virtual fly-in, coincidentally on the day that the public comment period for seat elevation closed, actually, was the virtual fly-in. It was free for participants this year, thanks to support from sponsors. And you had more than 300 people sign up, which was a big increase over the 2021 event. And if you're not familiar with the event, participants spent the day talking to Congress and staffers about Medicare funding for power chair seat elevation and standing, the need for increased reimbursement for CRT because of the many, many additional costs brought on by the pandemic, and then the need to retain telehealth options for our CRT clinicians after the public health emergency ends. So how did that fly-in go?
Oh, Lori, we had a phenomenal turnout for this year's fly-in. And, you know, the timing of it really, as you said, kind of worked out perfectly. We could not have planned this any better. You know, when CRT Awareness Week started in August, that started on August 15th, which happened to be the day that CMS announced the opening of the comment period for power seat elevation systems. And we bookmarked it, as you just clarified, on September 14th, the end of the comment period, but also the introduction of the House sign-on letter that Don referenced as he was going through that update. So really, the timing of everything for CRT advocates was pretty great. And we were thankful for that. It made for a little bit of a chaotic summer, but I think a very productive one. And we had a lot of information to share with advocates and a lot to educate Congress and other policymakers with. So it was really fantastic. And like you said, we had more than 300 advocates from 43 states register to participate in this year's fly-in. And because of that, we were able to make the connection with 292 congressional offices. Now, that's 71 offices more than we met with last year. So having additional registrants, having additional participants makes a huge difference in how far we are able to spread the CRT message. These offices heard from all facets of the complex rehab technology community. So CRT users, who I will just pause and say their participation in these meetings is so powerful and it cannot be matched. It cannot be duplicated. So it is so critical to have users of CRT sharing their personal experiences in these meetings. But we also had, you know, clinicians, providers, manufacturers, and other advocacy organizations within our space who are participating as well. And as you mentioned, these meetings provided an opportunity for those advocates to establish or strengthen lines of communication with their members of Congress and to share what challenges we currently need help with. We've shared over the years that, you know, we want to be at the table, so to speak, when policymakers are deciding where to take action, either legislatively or in regulation. And this fly-in does exactly that year after year. So we are already thinking about how to make it even bigger and better in 2023 and cannot wait to see our network of advocates continue to grow as we move into the year ahead. Now, we also happen to be participating in a congressional briefing on September 14th that was a separate event but coincided with the fly-in as well. This happened to be in person in DC. So Wayne, our incoming executive director, was able to be there in DC in person for that event. So I'm going to let him talk about that just a little bit, because that was really exciting as well.
Thanks, McKay. I appreciate that. I mean, first of all, I'd like to say both Don and McKay did an unbelievable job. This is a record year for us. So Don's really putting the pressure on McKay and I for next year to try to beat it. So thanks, Don. I appreciate that. Everything circled around really September 14th, comment period closed, our fly-in, and then we decided on top of it, let's have a congressional briefing as well. So we participated with the ITEM Coalition, which is led by a gentleman by the name of Peter Thomas. He's based in DC. Very, very strong advocates for individuals that need equipment and for the disability community. So he did a phenomenal job. But really what the congressional briefing was about was we basically got a hold of a room in the Senate building and we sent out invitations to all the different offices, both on the House side and on the Senate side. We then had a briefing. So we essentially gave them an update of what was happening. And it was very well planned because it wasn't just industry stakeholders. You had clinicians there. You had physicians there. We had consumer groups. We had providers, and we also had the consumers themselves. And McKay is so right that the message from the consumers is so, it just makes you realize what this really means to the individual. Sometimes I think people forget about this. We're taking care of people that are using this equipment. So having them there and having them participate was just something that was really brought home the message. And on top of that, we had Senator Tammy Duckworth, who is actually a user of CRT. And she's been one of our champions for many years, come and speak, and she did an amazing job. And then also Representative Dan Muser came over, who's had many years experience in this industry and so forth. And he came over and also to address the access issues this was really going to focus on. Overall, we had about 70 people there. A lot of folks that I talked to afterwards from different offices says, oh, now we understand. And that's what I think really drove it home for us is that, you know, people still, maybe we take it a little bit for granted. I mean, we've been doing this a long time, but people sometimes still don't understand complex rehab technology and what it does to help individuals live better lives.
Wayne, that sounds great. And I know that during the meetings I was in, we had a couple of staffers ask, is this a bipartisan support issue? Are you, when you get these letters, is it one party versus the other party, or is it a bipartisan issue? And we've been able to say it's absolutely bipartisan. And it sounds like from your congressional briefing that that's what you saw in the room as well. Is that true?
Yeah, both Republicans and Democrats were there. You know, Senator Duckworth is a Democrat, Representative Muser is a Republican. But I think you also see that on the sign-on letters that we have. I mean, we have both Republicans and Democrats leading this effort because this goes beyond politics.
Very well put. So let's talk now about NCART's transition, because Don is departing and Wayne is joining NCART as its new executive director. It's a passing of the baton, as McKay described it to me. So Wayne, can you give us a preview of what your priorities will be, especially early on as you come aboard full-time and permanently?
Sure. Well, first of all, don't drop the baton. So that's the first thing. So, you know, look, I've known Don for 20 years. He's done an amazing job with this industry. He is a class act. For me to walk into his shoes, I don't think you can fill them, okay? I do things a little bit differently. I'm looking forward to this. I've got an unbelievable person I'll be working with, McKay. I don't think people realize the organization that she has and how she keeps everything together. I am constantly going, hey, do we have this? Do we have this? And she does an amazing job. So really, what I'm trying to do is to understand all the different parts that we have moving at this point. We're working a lot of state issues along with some of the federal issues. You know, talking to some of the members and so forth, it seems like in 2023, really the focus is going to be on a couple of things. One is we do have to get payment reform. Our folks are facing major increases due to inflation. And as we know, they're really stuck to fixed fee schedules. So that's a big issue. But number two is repair and service reform. We've got to make this process better and quicker so that consumers can get the equipment they have repaired as quick as possible. That's going to be another big issue. And of course, seating elevation and standing is still, while we've made a great first step, there's probably four or five other steps that we've got to make sure that we're managing properly moving forward to this. Both McKay and I are going to be at our board meeting in October, meeting with our board to really set the strategy for 2023. Again, Don's done an amazing job, and he's led this organization for a long time. We're just going to continue with his legacy and continue to push and make sure that the people we serve are getting the equipment they need. And if we focus on that, then all the other things will fall into place.
Thanks, Wayne. And McKay, I wanted to also talk a little bit about CRT Awareness Week. You had a great turnout for the fly-in, obviously. Also, though, terrific participation during CRT Awareness Week in August. And while we're talking about passing the baton without dropping it, CRT has had a large number of longtime advocacy warriors. But do you see these sorts of events like CRT Awareness Week and the fly-in as a way to recruit and teach new advocates, maybe as a way to build the next generation of CRT warriors?
Oh, I absolutely do, Lori. And, you know, we did have a very strong CRT Awareness Week this year. Once again, we saw over 100 organizations participating in that week. And again, that week is all about what you just said, educating and advocating and shining a spotlight on the work that's being done to protect access to this critical technology. And in part, that's why we pour so much time and effort into providing the education and support during each of these events and throughout the year, really. I know we often reference the fact that advocacy isn't a sprint, but it's a marathon. However, there's no runner, regardless of their physical prowess, who can run indefinitely. And so at some point, there have to be others to pass that baton to, like you just said. This year, both for CRT Awareness Week and especially for the fly-in, we had a few organizations with some of those longtime advocacy warriors that you just mentioned, who personally took the time to recruit, you know, 10, 20, 60 other people to get involved in the fly-in. And that was huge. They wanted them to learn the process, to better understand the need for advocacy and to experience how empowering it is to connect with Congress or with others to advance our initiatives and communicate the needs of our industry, of our community. And I know it lit a fire in a lot of people this year. I heard such good feedback, and NCART is going to be here to fan that flame as we move forward. Like Wayne just said, carrying on the legacy of the work that has already been done, the victories we've already had, and you know the things that we're right in the middle of, we're going to see those through straight to the finish line and continue to protect access to CRT on behalf of individuals with disabilities. So I know that Don has spent a lot of time expressing the need for more advocates to get involved. That's one of his battle cries over and over. So I want to hand the mic over to him to share a little bit more about that, because he has as always, such great points about why getting others involved in advocacy now, especially, is just so critical as we look into the future of complex rehab.
Great, McKay. Thanks. And I'll just keep it brief, but I think you're exactly right. And you did a great job outlining that. I think a lot of over the years, you know, we get questions because we continue to have to advocate for CRT. And so one of the things that we try and do through the NCAR channel is to emphasize to people that if you're involved in complex rehab technology, advocacy needs to be part of your yearly activities. I won't say daily because we don't require that type of commitment, but we do require occasional commitment. And NCAR's job really is to facilitate, direct, make that as easy as possible. But when we talk about access to CRT, we've done a very good job creating the identity and educating people, which is the first step. But we need more voices doing that. And so when folks have asked me over the years, geez, we're continuing to have to go to Congress or go to state legislators, what do we need? I basically tell them we need more voices. I think we've got a very good message. We've got a lot of good documents. Certainly, we're going to be adding to that. But the biggest thing we need is just more people engaged. And the good news is we're not looking for people to spend, you know, 10 hours a month on this. We're looking for people when NCAR puts out a request for emails or a request for some phone calls or when we have our fly-ins. People, if they can participate in that, their voices really are what we need. And as you said, Lori, and as McKay and Wayne have mentioned, the in-person voices, the consumer voice is great, but also the voice of that clinician, the voice of the manufacturer provider, all those come together, and we just need more of those. And I think this was a great bump in our participation this year. As McKay and Wayne said, they're going to be building on this as we go forward.
Thanks, Don. It really did show, I think, how many more people can make such a huge difference. Thank you again to the sponsors who helped that fly-in be a free experience. And I know even in the debriefing, a consumer mentioned how helpful that was, especially because we're all dealing with higher prices at the grocery store and at the gas pump and all that. So thank you again to those sponsors. And Don, I did want to take a moment to say thank you. Farewell rather than goodbye. I really appreciate all the help and support that you've given Mobility Management and me personally. I trust that you will please, please stay in touch about your future ventures. And I just wanted to say thank you for everything.
Great, Lori. Well, thank you for that. And really personally, thank you, you know, for all your commitment to CRT. 20 years, I guess we started this relationship back when you were just starting high school, probably. But really, I think you and Mobility Management have done such a great job. And really, I think it's an illustration of the great people and organizations we've got in really our CRT community. And we've talked about, we have our different segments. You know, we have the industry folks and the medical professionals and the consumers and the consumer groups. Everybody plays a role, and certainly Mobility Management helping us get the message out there, and the way you've communicated over the years, making it easy for people to understand, has been very helpful. But I would just close by again saying thank you to everybody who's involved in advocacy. It's a big area. I'm very proud of the work that NCAR has done. Thanks to our board of directors and our members and all our supporters. McKay has just been such a great asset to the industry also, and it's great that she's going to be continuing. And I wish Wayne the best of luck. Wayne knows the industry and has a good style about him, so I know he's going to do very well. So I think there's a lot of work to be done. We've made some good progress, so I'm looking forward to continuing to watch things, and I'm going to be exploring some other possibilities. Who knows what the next chapter will be, but I'll certainly stay in touch with everybody. So thank you again, Lori.
Thanks, Don. And thank you also to McKay Lee and to Wayne Grau as well. McKay, Wayne, I appreciate your time, and I look forward to our next NCAR update episode. I hope you'll both come back.
Absolutely,
Lori. Yep. Thanks so much for having us.
So that wraps up this episode of the Mobility Management Podcast. Our podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The best way to make sure you don't miss any episodes is to subscribe. And you can also go onto our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll be back again soon.